Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films One Life, Limbo, and Love Lies Bleeding.
I'd like to start today by talking about really a lovely movie, which is lovely in part because of its subject and in part because it stars the great Anthony Hopkins. As we all know, Anthony Hopkins is not always lovely. Probably his most famous role of all time is the cannibalistic Hannibal Lecter in The Silence of the Lambs. But he can do almost anything. He's a spectacular actor, and he doesn't always score, but this time he really does. The movie itself is a very sweet movie. It's a very nice movie. I don't think it's a great movie, but it's about a very worthwhile and interesting subject. So, the subject of One Life, which was directed by James Hawes, is a very real person whose name was Sir Nicholas Winton, known to everybody in the movie as Nicky. He's a regular sort of a guy. You know, he has a job and he, you know, goes to the office and he's sort of an executive and he that's what he does. However, all of this is taking place in the late 1930s. And since he is in England, in Europe, the imminent beginning of World War II is very much in the air. The Nazis are on the move, and Hitler is doing his evil international things and also his evil internal things. The Holocaust is beginning. And anyway, there are some people who are very, very concerned about this. So all of this comes to the attention of Nicholas Winton, who himself, interestingly, had German parents. However, he was born shortly after they moved to the United Kingdom, to England. And they changed their name, they anglicized it, and he actually has this this German background. He also has a Jewish background. He was baptized in the Church of England, but he is very aware that on his mother's side of the family, he has Jewish ancestors. So anyway, now all these things are going on with Hitler, with the Nazis, with just their evil plans to conquer as much of the world as they can, and their evil plans to rid the world of Jewish people. And he feels a connection with all this. And even though he's never been a religious person, and as I say, he's kind of, you know, he works basically as a stockbroker, and he's also something of a socialist. Anyway, he decides he really needs to somehow get involved in this. And so he decides to go to Czechoslovakia, where right now there is an urgent crisis. And there's a very marvelous line fairly early in the movie when Nicholas Winton's old mother, not that old, but pretty old, who's played wonderfully by Helena Bonham Carter, she says, "Everybody in Prague is trying to get out. My son is trying to get in." Because that's what the first challenge that Sir Nicholas faces. He's not Sir Nicholas yet, is simply get in there. But he does get in there. And he gets together with a couple of colleagues, and they decide that what they really need to do is to help people there get out, help people there who are in danger escape, and especially the children. There are children. And they are helpless children, and they are children who no longer have parents to take care of them for one reason or another. And so, okay, this is what we've got to do something about, decides Nicholas Winton and his colleagues. So, yeah, there are some other British people and others in Czechoslovakia, in Prague, who are trying to help. But Nicholas Winton really has to move things into another level. And the first thing he discovers is that there's a tremendous amount of just red tape. There's a tremendous amount of paperwork that has to be done. This is not the first film to deal with the paperwork of war, with the paperwork of the Holocaust, with the paperwork of combating the Nazis. But it's a very interesting one because all this stuff really happened. So there he is. He's got a somehow guarantee to the UK and other countries that the children will have to go through on their way to the UK, guarantee that there will be people there who will take care of them at least until they turn 17 years old, that there will have to be a certain amount of money, and apparently by today's dollars, this would be around $10,000 to look after their needs. And without that, they won't be allowed into England. So there he is. He's working on this stuff. He's working on this paperwork. He's working on getting visas and permissions of various kinds. And of course, working on the transportation that's going to be necessary. So that's what the movie is about. And I will say, since this is actually a fairly well-known story, yeah, he succeeds in a lot of this. A horrible thing happens with the last train, which is also has the largest shipment of children, and that we do learn about that late in the film. But most of the trains do get through, and it turns out that he is able to save a grand total of 669 children whose lives otherwise would have been ruined and probably lost. So that's what the movie is about. Now, the end of the movie, by the way, the movie has a certain similarity to Schindler's List, of course, which is a very fine movie in a lot of ways. But the end of One Life, like the end of Schindler's List, suddenly trades its sort of hard-boiled, straight-ahead, these-are-the-facts approach for a whole overflowing well of sentimentality. I could do without the ending of Schindler's List. I could do without the ending of One Life. It's very nice to know how all this turned out, but the movie really does kind of overdo it, I think. So the end of the movie is very sentimental, and what you can really do then is sort of gathering your coat and putting away your popcorn bag and getting ready to leave. That said, most of the movie is really quite gripping to watch. Anthony Hopkins is, as usual, wonderful. There are also very, very fine performances by other people, including some people who have been around for quite a long while. For example, Marta Keller is in the movie, and she's a very gifted person who I haven't seen very often lately, but has been around, again, for a very long time. Helena Bonham Carter, I already mentioned. So it's a lovely movie. It has all kinds of beautiful things in it. Again, I think the ending goes a bit over the top, but oh my gosh, it's really, really quite a story to watch. And Anthony Hopkins, as always, is quite a person to watch. He's not the only good actor in the movie, but he's an extraordinary actor, and I say take every opportunity there is to watch Anthony Hopkins do his marvelous stuff. Next movie I'd like to talk about is very different. In fact, two movies now, which have a connection kind of with film noir. And the first one is an Australian movie called Limbo. And this was written and directed by Ivan Sen, who is an Australian director and who has done very, very good work in this movie. Limbo is really quite a remarkable film. You have to be in the mood for it, or at least like this sort of thing. But if that is the case, then you'll have a good time with this. So our main character is a detective, a cop, a police officer, played by Simon Baker in quite a marvelous performance. And he is not your ordinary average heroic type detective. For one thing, he seems to be always miserable and unhappy. Well, I guess some detectives really are. For another thing, he's a drug addict. The first thing we see in the movie practically is him injecting himself with what is probably heroin, and he does that more than once over the course of the movie, so that's a little bit unconventional, and it seems to fit in with his very sorrowful demeanor. This is not a happy person. We can tell that right away. So anyway, he goes to this place, this location, about which more in just a moment, to open up a cold case. A woman disappeared 20 years ago. Nobody ever found out exactly what happened. He has never been able to let this rest. Now he is back in this place, and he is trying to find out what happened 20 years ago. And there he finds some people who are willing to cooperate with him, at least to an extent. Other people who are resistant to this whole thing. One person says, we needed the fresh eye on all this 20 years ago, not now. In any case, there he is, and he is determined to somehow solve this case. So he contacts various people. There's an old white man who may be sort of on the way out. He's miserable, and he seems to be all alone, and nobody cares for him, and all he has is his dog, and eventually, I'll have to reveal this, he loses his dog. Okay. Other people are indigenous people. There's quite a few of them in the movie. For example, the sister of the woman who disappeared, and she has children, and they become important characters in the movie. So all of these people are interesting, and all these people are important characters, and of course we have this mystery at the core of it. But what we mainly have in Limbo, and this is the most crucial thing of all, is the setting. oh my gosh, the setting of this movie. The movie was filmed in a real area in the Outback. This movie is being billed, by the way, as Outback Noir. The movie was filmed at a real place where people live as much as they possibly can in underground dugouts, in caves, in places that have been dug out, and there's holes all over the place that people have gone into. There's also been a lot of mining in the area. And so that is the dominant thing in the movie. Not so much our detective Travis, not so much the other characters, not so much even the mystery, but the setting. Because we are carried through that setting throughout the movie. We go into those dugouts. We go into those caves. We go into those holes. We see what happens in there. We get a sense of what it's like to be in them, and especially what it's like to live in them. It's really extraordinary. Even where our detective Travis is staying, it appears to be a motel. By the way, it's called Limbo, the Limbo Motel. But it advertises underground accommodations. Evidently, it gets really, really hot in this particular place, in the remote outback of Australia, and people take to these underground places to simply get away from the scorching sun. So that is really the dominant thing in the movie, and it is all photographed magnificently. And when I say magnificent, I don't mean luxurious. It's the opposite of that. It's barren, it's sterile, it's empty. However, that is conveyed with such force that it lends a really extra dimension of power to the story. And of course, the story, this very downbeat story of this probably futile effort to open up this old cold case and find out what really happened to this person who was obviously mistreated 2 decades ago. This mystery lends extra force to the setting, just as the setting lends extra force to the mystery. So Limbo is a really, really fine movie. Ivan Sen has just done a splendid job of directing it, of bringing alive, of making it compelling from beginning to end, even though so much of the material is just not all that promising. I mean, the detective is dour and downbeat and always unhappy. Most of the people in the movie are just the same as that, and the setting brings it all out even more. But my gosh, it is really something to see. Your eyes just won't forget this, and your mind just won't forget this for quite a while. Limbo is a really strong, solid, and unique movie. Very, very different from anything else on the current scene. If you like noir, you shouldn't miss it. If you don't like noir, give it a shot anyway. It's really unlike anything else around. Lastly, a movie which I didn't like so much, another noirish movie called Love's Lies Bleeding. This is directed by Rose Glass, who also co-wrote the screenplay. Her last film was a horror movie called Saint Maud, which thrilled a lot of people. I thought it was pretty good, but not as great as a lot of other people did. So she's a talented filmmaker, but I don't think a first-rate filmmaker, at least not yet. She's still starting out her career. But Love Lies Bleeding is a different kind of a thing. It's not a horror movie. It's more of a noirish kind of a thing. And our main character, played by Kristen Stewart, and oh, she is so much, to my mind, the thing that makes this movie worth watching. She is a woman who lives in a little town somewhere in the Southwest, New Mexico, most likely, and she works in a gym. And there she's just doing the grunt work, the scrub work. She's just cleaning the toilets and stuff like that. That's what she does. Then, as often happens in film noir, a stranger comes to town. And in this case, it is a woman named Lou. Jackie. Lou is our main character. Jackie is our second main character. She walks into the gym, and the next thing you know, the two women fall in love. First of all, they fall in lust, and once the sex is over, we see they're going to stick together, and they're going to do things together, and from here on in, we have a very strong lesbian romance, so that's just fine. And what happens is that they run into various complications in their lives, various complications in their romance, and above all, Lou, the woman who worked in the gym and is now going off with Jackie, she has a father played by the great Ed Harris, who doesn't look anything like Ed Harris here. My gosh, he's got this long, scraggly hair, and his face looks all, oh my gosh, really aged and craggy and seamy, but he's always fun to watch, and he's really fun to watch in this movie. And the next thing you know, they're on the road going off to Las Vegas, where Jackie is going to be in a bodybuilding contest. So that's our plot line. But of course, all kinds of complications and violence and crazy things happen along the way. So again, for me, what made this movie worth watching was watching Kristen Stewart, who gives a very fine performance. She's good. She's very good in the movie. She's almost always good. And I certainly did like her here. The rest of the cast, except for Ed Harris, didn't just thrill me so much. The romance, it's there, but, you know, it's a noirish romance. It's not so much love as just sort of people bonding together and sticking together no matter what, because the whole world is against them anyway, and then they face all kinds of things along the way. The movie's been compared with great hard-boiled writers like James M. Cain and Jim Thompson, and yeah, the story and the characters do have a lot to do with those writers and with the sort of old-fashioned noir sensibility that they represent. But it's very much a modern movie, especially in its lesbian angle, and it's fun to watch in a lot of respects. It never grabbed me, it never moved me, it never got me excited, but hey, it's well enough done. I still think that Rose Glass is a rising filmmaker who someday will do something that really grabs my attention. In this case, oh, she's on her way there, but not there quite yet. So Kristen Stewart fans should by all means catch Love Lies Bleeding. Others can probably afford to skip it. So that is my partly noirish story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films One Life, Limbo, and Love Lies Bleeding.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.